38% of Ohio's teenagers have spent money on gambling in video and online games. And the earlier a child is introduced to gambling behaviors, the higher the risk of experiencing a gambling disorder as an adult. Start the conversation at changethegameohio.org.
Psoriatic arthritis symptoms can be unpredictable.
I had joint pain, and I couldn't move like I used to.
I needed relief.
I got Cosentyx.
It helped me move better.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for people 2 years of age and older with active psoriatic arthritis. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your rheumatologist about Cosentyx.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Joanna Fortune joins us once again to answer some of your parenting queries. If you've got a question for Joanna, afternoon@newstalk.com is the address to send it to. Right, here's the first question.
Okay.
My 13-year-old son is very conscientious and in the past has been quite emotionally affected by news stories. I've tried to discourage him from paying too much attention to the news. He's a curious child with an interest in current affairs and history, so it's difficult to dissuade him. I would like him to spend as much of his childhood as is left being a child. God knows kids have enough to deal with without having to take on board all of the killing and injustice that goes on. Anyway, it's reached a bit of a troubling head. I've heard him parroting quite inflammatory phrases in relation to the conflict in Gaza and claiming that groups of boys in his school were on one side or another. Just to be clear, there's no one in his class or in school that would be saying this, so I don't know where he's picking these things up. How do I deal with this behaviour? I want to make sure he has a good sense of right and wrong. This is obviously a troubling and difficult conflict, and in a way, I don't want to open up the discussion too much. I really wish he could steer clear of difficult news stories for a few more years, but I guess that's not going to happen. What should I do?
I mean, right now, there's only difficult news stories. You know, that's really all there is. But it was interesting, like when this parent is saying, you know, how could he have picked up these phrases? It's definitely not coming from anyone in school. I'm curious about how you could be so certain about that.
Yeah.
First of all, he's 13, so I'm wondering, does he have a smart device? Because if he has a smart device, he has access to news, and particularly news through the lens of social media, which is a very particular way of accessing news.
Yeah.
You know, it's very much following people who have very strong views one way or the other, depending on who he's following. Same with his classmates or his schoolmates. It is highly, I wouldn't say highly likely, I think it's highly probable that this is being discussed, at least in some way, or whatever 90-second nuggets of information they're picking up. And the kind of news stories that are being referenced here, they're all over social media.
Yeah.
So I would much rather that he's watching and discussing it with his parents, you know, that you're doing that together, than he's online alone hearing goodness knows what from goodness knows whom, you know. And it's not a, because you can be that filter, even if, you know, when lots of people, particularly his age, prefer to get their news stories through social media, watch that with him. And make sure you know who and what he's hearing, and you can clarify. Like generally, and this is very much generally speaking, because no two kids are the same, but I would say shield children who are under 7 years old from bad or tragic news stories as best we can in the world. Keep them away from it. You know, extremely minimize their access to the news stories. But when they're more 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, instead of shielding them, be curious about what they already know, because they've probably picked up little nuggets along the way that, you know, that they've heard, and they would really benefit from clarity, you know, and from reassurance. So assume they know something, but it could be just little broken bits of information.
Yeah.
You're very likely when you talk to them to need to add small details of information to pad out or round out what they're hearing. But once they've hit teenage years, as this young man has, I would certainly say you have to assume that they know about news events, but do not assume that they know everything or what they know is fully detailed and accurate. There are very likely to be gaps, and probable misinformation in what they're gleaning. So you definitely have to talk about it. I think because he's interested in current affairs, invite him to chat to you as if he was a journalist, because he clearly has an interest in politics and current affairs. Just say, imagine you're interviewing me, ask me all the questions, or you present what you know about the news story and I'll respond to you as if I'm going, oh, what about, and did you know, and we could be having a debate. So it's a playful way of kind of saying, let's do it like a news story or a debate, or we're on a panel show, you take one side, I'll take the other, and let's pretend debate it out. But really what you're getting across there is a more rounded narrative, so that even if he doesn't agree, he's hearing and aware of another perspective on whatever it might be.
Yeah. I wonder what the, I'm curious as to what the inflammatory phrases in relation to Gaza were. Because particularly because there's just so many horrific pictures of what's being done to Gaza and Gazans that you know, that will prompt
And I do think we need to be talking with our teenagers about what's happening in Gaza. Like, this is something that they're going to grow up knowing. Like, this is historic, and it's appalling and horrific. And you're right. If he has a smart device, he has seen images that none of us want. Well, we don't want our kids seeing them, but we don't want them happening to anyone either.
Yeah.
So we do have to be that filter for them to make, don't think they haven't seen it. They absolutely have. So make sure you're there to reassure, guide, mind, or clarify, because we can't provide a whole lot of reassurance with those images because they are horrific.
Mm.
But we can support our kids when they see them.
My daughter is 9. She will be 10 in a few weeks. She has asked me to set up a birthday party for her and her friends. But the problem is that she really dislikes her birthday. For the last few years, although she has had a party, I'd come to realise she really hates the whole process. She finds the whole process extremely stressful and is anxious for weeks beforehand. I've noticed her being increasingly agitated as we get closer to this year's date again. She's very bright and very popular in school, but she doesn't like being the centre of attention and prefers to do her own thing. At her age, though, I think the pressure to have a party is huge. I've told her that she doesn't have to have one, but she insists she actually wants one. How do I help her to realise she doesn't need to feel this way or to do anything she's not comfortable with?
I mean, I feel for this kid because, you know, like this parent saying, I think the pressure to have a party is huge. Yes.
Yeah,
it is.
Absolutely. Especially if she's been to other people's parties.
Exactly that. It's expected. It will be reciprocal. And she knows this. And it is tricky because, you know, when we, in my house, we have this word, you know, that if you're scared but excited, like, you know, like, I do want the party, but I don't like the build up or idea of it. We call it skited, you know, where you're scared, excited. So it doesn't mean I don't want it, but I don't feel very comfortable about the planning idea or thought of it. Maybe when I'm in it, I'm having a good time, but the build up is awful. And this is sounding a little bit like this. She doesn't like to be the kind of center of attention. And I think you could plan a party that is sort of centered around an activity where they're all doing something. So it's not all eyes on her or she has to be the one entertaining everybody. Like, think about parties that would maybe involve, I don't know, like things like the cinema. I'm thinking of her age, things like the cinema or one of those kind of adventure center experiential things, you know, that where they can go, but they're all doing something, or in the cinema. No one's looking at her. She doesn't have to perform. She doesn't have to be the party girl, so that you can keep it. I would also plan a contained 90 minute type of party. You know, so it's not one of those that goes on very long. There is a clear beginning and end to it. And during the party, everybody is occupied. I think that a bit of structure is basically what I'm talking about.
Usually, it's those, you know, yourself, those play center ones, it's like a sausage machine, really.
Absolutely. Just had one literally last weekend. So, you know,
they bounce around and eat some horrible cake.
And it's
gone.
90 exhausting minutes, but then it's done.
Noisy. So,
but you can have it. Keep it short, sweet and structured. Because she may not want the party, she may want the party is what I mean, but be uncomfortable about the feelings associated with it. So I think just say to her, look, I know you want to have this party, but I know it doesn't feel all that comfortable. How can we make the party as comfortable as it can be? What kind of a thing do you want to do? It might be smaller numbers of kids, shorter time, activity oriented.
Yeah. Because she is at that age now where you can start to move towards the smaller.
Yes, it generally
smaller
is.
Events, and it doesn't feel like a big, you know, a big Yahoo
it's
thing.
It's hard though, isn't it? Like, if you're not someone who likes those big parties and lots of attention. And if she really doesn't like it, you could skip the birthday party, the cake singing bit. You know, you could just say, we're just going to have a little cupcake for everybody going home, a little queen cake.
And not do that
and
bit.
And not
yeah,
do the candles and
idea.
Singing, because yeah. a lot of kids don't like that.
Yeah. I have a 5-year-old boy who's quite shy by nature. He wouldn't be hugely confident, and making friends doesn't come easily for him, but I'm confident that will improve with time. However, he constantly talks in a baby voice at home and in school, maybe 80% of the time. Any tips for getting him out of this? Now, he's only 5.
Exactly. He's only 5. So for me, he's still kind of in that stage of babiness, or he's baby adjacent. Okay,
yes,
let's put
is,
it that
yes.
way. Just to say, because I know if people go on to Dr. Google, please don't do that. But I know everybody does do it. You will see things that this could indicate, a speech delay. And a child of this age who uses a baby voice, or what's often described as an infantile speech pattern, but it's exactly what you're talking about, a baby voice. It could be a sign of temporary regression or of a speech delay. But, and this is a big but, it's often a signal that they're comfort seeking.
Yeah.
You know, it's very, very common. It's very normal. It's actually very effective when you think about it, that when our children are using a baby voice, but we know that they can use their 5-year-old voice, for example. He's not using it all the time, but at certain times it's usually, I'm a bit overwhelmed. There's been a lot going on. I feel I've done enough big kid stuff today. And what I'd really like is cuddles and to be held and to be minded and to be babied. And it's very hard without the emotional fluency to say, my day has drained me. I need to be minded. But to use the voice is a cue of saying, that's where I'm at the moment. Meet me where I'm at. Mm. So I wouldn't be panicking about that. He's only 5 years old. If you're listening and you think, no, it's more of a dominant speech pattern, of course, consult with a speech and language therapist, if only to reassure yourself. And don't, you know, that's a very good idea to do that. But I think what this parent is saying about his apparent low confidence, that he has challenges making connections, he is 5, you're absolutely right, that is likely to change. And hold in mind, at 5 years old, kids' friendships tend to be quite transient. Mm. You know, like they have a friend 1 week who's not a friend the next week. And they're really trying to out who's like me, who's not, who makes me feel good, who doesn't. So I wouldn't panic about that at 5 either. But I'm curious about him comfort seeking. And might the day just be a lot for him?
Yeah,
you know, just a lot
be.
Of demands and a lot of trying things out. You could support him a bit with those social connections by having play dates. Now, you know, my views on play dates, they're a want, not a need. Like, you don't have to do them. And if you do them, 60 at his age, 60 to 90 minutes is a nice little play date duration. Any more than that, it's pushing kids a little bit beyond their own comfort zone, you know.
Yeah.
So a 60 to 90 minute play date that you structure with a few activities that involve collaborative working together, a little bit of helping each other out, and just give him time.
Yeah. My husband and I are raising our children bilingually. They are 3 and 5 years old. While my wife speaks English, I don't speak her language. I am finding that it causes quite a lot of miscommunication. She tends to be the one who does most of the discipline, and afterwards, I don't know what's been said. This is tricky when the child gets upset. I ask my wife to translate, but when tempers have flared, she sometimes dismisses my requests. While I was really keen on being a bilingual household initially, I'm now regretting the decision. I feel isolated in my parenting, and that we're not actually co-parenting at all, but instead we've become two separate parenting units that are not connected. Could you offer some advice, please? Ooh, this is more a relationship thing.
I think the crux of this is actually buried within this question, and I don't think it's about speaking different languages. She tends to be the one who does most of the disciplining.
Yeah.
I'm like, why? And no, that's not okay. And then, you know, it's this whole, you know, afterwards, I don't know what's been said, and it's tricky if my child's upset and I ask her to translate, but she's not in the mood. I'm like, okay, hang on now. You're either involved in the discipline or you're not, but you don't get to be good cop all the time and then put a demand on her. Now that you've served up the discipline, justify your actions to me and I'll decide if you were right or not, and then comfort the child. That's where this is going wrong. It's not that you're speaking a different language. It's that the communication, in spite of all the languages being spoken at home, communication and connection are key. That's really what the crux of it is. It is not your wife's duty to translate or explain her disciplining of the children, just so you can decide if she was being fair. You have to be more involved, and the children need to see both of you on the same page. That means you're co-parenting, you're co-disciplining, you're co-playing, you're co-helping, you're co-raising. It's everything. So I think that's the main thing. I think with in households where there are more than one language spoken and one parent doesn't speak the other's language, I do think there can be, Sean, a little bit of isolation within that
because
you're the only member of your house that could be cut out of conversation. So I'm also wondering, could you take classes and strengthen your language skills? You may not be fluent, but, put some Duolingo on your phone or take some classes and at least start building up your language skills. So again, the children do see that you're getting involved in this part of their world too. I'm always, when there's a parent who is the sole disciplinarian at home and they're doing it in one language, I also don't want the children associating that language with being in trouble.
Yes, yeah, and English is the good language.
Yeah,
then.
That's where we get cuddles, but this one is when we're in trouble. So I think as a couple, be really careful about the splitting that this could enable, not just between good cop, bad cop parenting, but also good language, bad language association. Mm. So I just think this is really about communication, ironically, but not
in the
specific
way you mean.
Yes, yeah. But don't let one of you be the disciplinarian. It's not fair, but it's also not in the children's interest.
Yeah. On a similar vein, I was hoping to get advice on a situation me and my ex-partner have regarding a co-parenting plan for our daughter, who's a toddler. We lived together until a few months ago and have had a split of me, the father, for two 24-hour periods and one daytime per week, with the rest of the time spent with her mother. I have a very strong bond with my daughter and live in the house we all lived in before the split. I've been very involved in her parenting from a young age and want to be as involved as possible. What is the best split of care for our daughter, assuming we're both on board with the process and respectful of each other? We live nearby and want to co-parent respectfully.
I mean, this is new, isn't it? It's just a few months ago that they split. I think the fact that you want to be as involved as possible, this is great. And it's also really important. I'm just really picking up on that word, assuming we're both on board with the process. So yes, let's assume. But actually more than that, let that be your priority. Try to protect being on the same page.
Mm.
Like, this is definitely something that you want to be collaborating on. So there is no particular specific ideal number of days or hours that I can give, because none exists. Mm. Okay, that is very unique and bespoke to individual families, individual children within families, and also to do with their age, stage of development, any other variables or considerations that that child, I don't know, if it's a toddler and they're still being breastfed or there's all kinds of considerations that would influence
considerations
this.
For the parents' time as well, if they have jobs and all
well,
that
exactly.
kind of stuff.
Well, exactly. But it sounds like there is a good, fairly balanced arrangement in place at the moment. And the fact that they both live close to each other is going to be great, particularly as this little girl grows up and gets older, because she'll be able to move freely between their homes and see, because they're her homes.
Yes.
That's going to enable her to really have that sense of ownership and belonging in both homes. I think it has to be, Sean, about quality over quantity a lot of the time, and focusing on keeping your relationship with your ex-partner open and respectful, so that as co-parents, you're working together. That is going to be the best thing you do, not sitting down and seeing who has exactly what hours on a given week, but that there has to be flexibility and adaptability within these arrangements, because even if you have something agreed, you need to be able to say, I'm sick this week, or, I've got something on, or this, and our children need to see that we are both their parents, even when we're not living apart, and that they're our focus. So I'd really invest in this piece about assuming we're both on board with the process and respectful of each other. I think that should be your priority, because that is an investment in your daughter.
Okay. So it doesn't, because I'm getting, and maybe I'm inferring too much from this, but they seem to be saying, should it be not be 50-50 in terms of time?
And it's probably a little shy of 50-50 the way it's explained there. It's probably a 60-40, give or take. And I'm not going to say it should, because there isn't a should, to be honest with you. It's very much dependent on people's lifestyle arrangements, age and stage of who's doing what. Like, there's so many other variables there. But if as a parent you feel that you would like more time, then certainly sit down together, state that. But you don't need to say, somebody says this is how it should be. You're allowed to say this is how I'd like it to be.
Yes.
You're allowed to say it's my preference, not it's right, therefore it must happen. Because that kind of puts you in battle mode when you're saying, but experts say it's the right thing to do. You're immediately quite defensive. So if you can approach this in a way of saying, look, this is going well for the last few months, but here's what I'm suggesting, because I'd really like an extra day or whatever it is. The other parent might say, yeah, why not? Great. Or they may say no, and here's why. Hear them out. And between you work that out. And it might be because your daughter is still a toddler and very young that this is the arrangement for now. And there is nothing to say that won't change as she gets older and that you change that arrangement between you. If you can keep it between you and keep it respectful and a mutual agreement, then that's obviously the ideal.
Yeah. But like, and as you say, it's kind of 60-40, and let's assume the dad's getting the 40. That's not, I assume that won't damage, and maybe he'll feel it'll damage his bond with his daughter.
No,
and
not at all. No, and that's why it's really the quality of the connection. And it sounds really good here, actually. That's the piece you're going to protect. No, children aren't like that. Children don't go, I don't feel that I get exactly the same here or there. Mm. They're looking, especially at this age, but they're looking at, are my needs being met?
Yes.
Regardless of which of you I'm with, are my needs met? Therefore, I'm happy.
Yeah.
So this does sound like it's working. There is no damage being done to that child in this instance. There's certainly no evidence here that there's damage being done. The damage really comes in, or the potential for damage comes in, when children know their parents don't like each other. There's a lot of fighting and a lot of tension, and they feel torn loyalties between two parents. That's very stressful for children.
Yeah.
So if you can keep that stress out of this mix, you're doing a tremendous job.
Yeah. And also as well, because she's a toddler, I mean, other than agreeing, you know, how the week is carved up, is there anything they need to agree about parenting the toddler at this stage?
I think it's a bit like the previous question, to be honest. I think it's very much that if you can keep communication open, Sean, and you know that as the parent, even if you're not with her on Thursday, but you know what's happening in her life on Thursday, that you've got this kind of shared information sharing, so that when you see her Friday, that you can say, how was such and such yesterday?
Yeah.
They go, oh, you know about me. So that even if we're not together, I'm hearing that you hold me in mind. And that's really good developmentally from people permanence. You know, being able to hold a mind in mind is this idea of mentalization, which is basically that we can know what we're thinking and feeling, but be aware of what someone else is thinking and feeling and hold those two together. This is, I mean, she's not going to do that. She's a toddler, but as adults, we can struggle to do that. So as adults, if you invest in that, she's going to grow up knowing, oh, my parents talk to each other. And that's useful as she gets older, because I can't actually pull the wool over either of their eyes. They
absolutely.
Talk to each other. That's essential.
Joanna, thanks, William.
Thank
as ever,
you.
Joanna Fortune there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.
Did you know 38% of Ohio's teenagers have spent money on gambling in video and online games? Items like mystery boxes, skins, and spin to win mimic gambling, putting children at a higher risk of experiencing a gambling disorder as an adult. So get in the know about youth gambling and start the conversation with discussion guides, parent resources, and more at changethegameohio.org. That's changethegameohio.org.